coisa assim, com costumes, praticamos os seus filhos.
Organization, so I want to see that it continues to contribute to HR and the community. It's become very much a vital part of the community. The museum next month celebrates its 50th birthday, and we have been partners with the county all along. And so I wanted to talk to you, kind of review what we do, and then talk with you about our contract. We have a biennial contract that does expire at the end of December. And so what my hope is that you would consider renewing that early so we can get it off the table so that my successor can come in, get adjusted to the job, work in the community, and not have to really get into all that, you know, by August. So that is my action item to me. Am I not talking about it? Okay. So in the room with me are current and past board members of the Historical Society. On the screen, those are the current trustees of the Clark County Historical Society and Museum. What we try to do is make sure that we get people from around the county, from different backgrounds, serving on the board. Our staff is just under 4 FTE. So we have a small staff that does all of the programming and public interface at the museum. In addition to, we have volunteer hours, and what you'll see is we generally average about 6,000 hours a year from people in the community to volunteer at the museum, which is key to our success. We have 2 government partners in this venture. The City of Vancouver owns and maintains the building. That gives us in-kind support. That includes inside and outside maintenance of the building. They also give us, this past year, $3,000 worth of cash program support on top of all the in-kind services. So their contribution each year is worth about $138,000. The county has been giving us $50,000 cash for general operating since 2007, and then we do apply every year for the HPG grant program, and this year that $25,639 is what was given to us from our, you know, awarded to us for our grant proposal to digitize part of the newspaper collection. And I'll talk. Historical Promotional Grants Program. Yeah. And then we get $26,000 in in-kind services. That includes printing and offset storage, maintenance of the van that you donated, that kind of thing. And all of this support is extremely critical to the survival of the organization. In addition to this, the Historical Society raises about 70% of the general operating funds for the museum. We operate on a very conservative budget, cash budget this year. It's a little skewed because we have a transportation enhancement grant for an exhibit we're doing, an installation at the depot. But if you take that capital expenditure off, we're at about $220 this year. And that's not a lot of money. And I'm not complaining. I'm very grateful for the support that we receive and the community involvement that we have. But I did want to just highlight that because my point here in all of that is we're a cheapskate. We are really a good investment of your dollars, okay?
half ton of mint, also in that $26,000 in the pine services, I assume that includes some of the great work that was done this year, really over the past year, by some of the unions, Robin White.
Oh, no, that's not in this. That's an addition. That's an addition. Yeah, that project is good. Yeah, and I'll talk about that. So the public is very involved. We do have an annual dinner auction that's May 10th this year. But so from the general community, we're getting 42% of the operating budgets from contributions. 29% is earned income. It's program revenue, store revenue, and small museum store. And then, of course, we get a lot of in-kind donations from businesses in the community and the 6,000 volunteer hours. So there is a broad base of support for the organization. If anybody can say anything about my legacy, they can say that, you know, I am an entrepreneur, and I am creative, and do believe very strongly in partnerships. Not just in my human. So if we look at the last 2 years, we've gotten about 60,000 hours donated from the community. For things, exhibit changes, doing the collections management, the lower right corner is Craig Sessoms, who's working on a database for the collection. In the center is 1 year of Harvest Funding, when they're making different pumpkins behind those scarecrows. You get a lot of involvement from people in many different ways, so they can use their skills in different ways. This is that central gallery renovation, museum door that we refer to. We have support for that from Paul Sherman Machine in Ridgefield. We have support from Colt Construction. And then also the trade unions came in and did all of the labor, and the city of Vancouver bought materials. That was an $80,000 renovation. That was the value on that. That we only had to put in less than $100 out of our pocket. Yeah, and they did it because they wanted to help the museum. This I bring in because I wanted to bring in somebody from outside the community's perspective. Bill and Charlene Boucher used to live in this community. They've been members of the Historical Society since 2004, and they've maintained that membership, even though they don't directly benefit on a daily basis from us. And this is why. This is an email that Bill sent me, and he gave me permission to share this with you. And this really says it all. You recognize money is always in short supply, and you use it effectively and to maximum benefit. I consider that to be the highest compliment that I could receive. We are not over there, just throwing money around. We recycle everything we can, and we make use of any partnerships.
It is called
resources. Thank you. Yeah. And one of the things that we are charged with, now we contract with you to provide museum services to the people of Clark County. And so we do maintain the museum collection. Now this is not the entire collection. These numbers on here are what came in 2013. In 2013 alone, we have 56 new accessions. And what? It's a legal thing because we have to have clear title to these things that people give us. So there is paperwork and we deed it over to the Historical Society. And so 222 items actually came in the door and were donated to the museum last year. And amongst those, and I know this is confusing because you see other organizations that count like every little pottery shard. And they're giving these huge numbers. Well, that's not realistic. These are 222 full items, and then 18 collections that were high volume. What those are archival collections, or like garden club documents or images. That's what that means. It just says they say high volume collection. So any donation that somebody makes, like if you look, Bill Hayden donated up top, you see the Hidden Brick Company sign up there. And so that is an accession. That item was brought into the museum's collection and moving. And that's actually something that is really tricky. A lot of people don't realize there were legal issues surrounding the collection. And if you want to know more about that, we can talk about that. Yes. And that way descendants can come back at you, and you know, it's all about real estate. We only have so much space, and we also have to look at it from the perspective of the citizens, because we're doing this for the people of Clark County. We're not doing this, you know, just because Susan likes XYZ. We have to think broadly about what's important to preserve to represent the community. And so I turn things away. I mean, we do have a process, and people do get rejected, which doesn't make me very popular, but we have to think about in terms of the whole. We can't think about just an emotion or passion. And I have stories about that that I have to say with you if you want to hear more about that. But it's a delicate balance because, you know, you can't keep everything.
Right.
We have kept some buildings.
Big enough?
No. And the museum is someday there needs to be a bigger museum. Because we are stuck to the match at the museum building and then it's just a building. Now, one of the things that we do provide is a dynamic and very relevant changing exhibit program every year. We're not a static operation, and this is something that I firmly believe in, that the community, you know, an opportunity to bring forward, you know, subjects that are relevant to the community and to create dialogue so that people can look at issues. And I had said this to you on your tour, and I tell this to everybody, it's not our job to tell people how to think, but if we can get them to think, then we're doing our job. And so we put forth the information, the historical information. We use the objects as the tools to do that, and to punctuate those things. And then the public does whatever they want with that information. And so last year we had 6 exhibit changes. I'm going to show you quickly this one. Oops, here we go. This one, Betty, we did last year, where we invited Clark County veterans to tell their stories through their military tattoos. This was a leap of faith. This was something, you know, that most museums wouldn't do. You know, you don't know what you're going to get, so I took a lot of risk with this. But I think it was an incredible opportunity to work with our veterans, give them a forum to talk about their stories in a safe manner. And that's exactly what it did, and in doing so, it did land us on NBC News, and also in the UK's Daily Mail. They picked it up as well. So we got international attention to this. Veterans got interviewed a number of times. We also, in addition to this being at the museum last year, in January, we took this to Clark County Fairgrounds for the antique show, because we participate in that every year. And so people got an additional opportunity to see the exhibit. Hats just came down, and this utilized the museum's hat collection, and there were men's and women's hats included in this exhibit. And it talked about some of the social issues around hats and also the history of the hats. That woman's hat on the top belonged to Mamie Eisenhower, former First Lady. This Optimist Club in Vancouver had asked her after she made her 1956, I think, visit to Vancouver. They asked her for a hat, and so she donated that for the organization. The men's hat on the lower right is General Anderson's dress badge when he was in charge of Vancouver Barracks in 1886. So we have a broad-based collection. This is the exhibit that you helped us with. Labor, a Working History. It looks at work in Clark County, starting with the Hudson's Bay Company, and then looking at national labor laws, and then looking at how this community responded to labor and labor unions. We have over 50 organizations and individuals get involved in supporting this financially. You know, so it's, and it's created a lot of dialogue. We're doing some panel discussions right now. We just had one at the library, which was, it's been shown on Foodie TV. And then we have three authors that are coming in. One's coming in this Saturday, and there's three between now and May 3rd. And people have the opportunity to read their book, and then we do a book discussion at the museum. These two exhibits are, the Curiosity is in that remodeled room that the unions worked on in this committee. That is looking at all the oddities in the museum's collection and some of the myths that keep being discussed around the community about our history that are not true. So this was a safe and non-confrontational way of us correcting those stories. Shadows of Conflict just opened on Friday night. Columbia Credit Union sponsored that exhibit, and that is looking at Clark County and the Civil War. It's following three Civil War veterans who moved to the county after the war, which was pretty common at that time, and how that impacted the community. There's an armadillo, and then there is a stool with the horns. I know, it's awful. That's in the museum's collection. And so that's part of the display. It's kind of like, why?
How do you imagine it like that? They really did.
They really did. Somebody liked that. and of course, the Native American Basketry exhibit, which showcases, and that's the book that we produced. The museum's got a spectacular Native American collection. There are over 220 baskets in the collection and about an equal amount of beadwork. And this is a very beloved exhibit. It's been up quite a while, actually. So we, it's something that people come there for. Now, the rest of this year, we do have, I mentioned that transportation enhancement grant. That will be putting the permanent installation in the Vancouver Depot. So our Amtrak passengers, while they're at the depot, there's over 100,000 passengers a year going through that depot now, is what Amtrak has told me. And so we have an MOU between Amtrak and the City of Vancouver for us to use that space for the exhibit that's going in there. And that is, it's looking now like by June 1st, we should have that installed. It will be a scale model of a Vancouver roundhouse that burned down, and also historical panels and a mural throughout the facility. Art of Legacy is something I wanted to bring up because that's one of our innovative school programs. We're working actually with the North Bank Gallery and with Thomas Jefferson Middle School. And we got a very small $2,000 from Target. Actually, the gallery got the money to do this project. And then the school district provided the transportation for the students and some, a little bit of money. The way that it works is that there are five artists that went into the classroom and worked with the students in the 7th and 8th grade level in the art class, talked to them about different art mediums. They came to the museum and they worked with our staff. And they chose objects from a museum's collection that they want to focus on. And so then the students are going to create an art piece based on that historical object. And then it will be on display at the museum and in the North Bay Gallery and potentially in City Hall. We're kind of, you don't know what we're going to get. Again, this is one of those leap of faith things. I have no idea what these kids are going to turn out, but it's a way of getting these kids ownership in the community and getting another different type of method of getting them to understand parts of their history. So very hands-on. And on first Thursday in June, those students will be our speaker for the lecture series with the artist to talk about the project.
Yes. Now,
No. Spokane, Portland, and Seattle Railway. Yeah, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry I didn't clarify that. There, the SPNS railway was Spokane, Portland, Seattle Railway is a significant part of this community's history. There are still a lot of employees who have family, descendants that live in the community. SPNS was absorbed into, there were like four mergers, and it's all part of now being at that, going to Northern. But you have a large person in the community who had someone who worked for the railroad. Columbia Credit Union started out as the SPNS credit union. That's their connection. Yeah. That far back. Yeah. So there are a lot of people in the community, and we have a large railroad collection. And so the objects won't go to the Amtrak station because Amtrak doesn't want the liability. But the objects are used at the museum and exhibits all the time. In fact, there's SPNS items on the floor right now and exhibits that are there. So yeah, it's something that's very near and dear to a lot of people in the community.
If I'm railroad, if I would be
they know about it, but I don't, you know, that's a really good point. I need to let them know the status of the exhibit. I've kind of gotten wrapped up in my own stuff and I forgot about that, so I will do that. And I need to be there for the bill for dedication to me. Okay. And then Origins of Food will open in the fall, and that's an exhibit that we're partnering with Candace Gelter, who's in the history faculty at WC Vancouver. So her students, this is another Leap of Faith, her students are researching topics related to different aspects of food for people in Clark County. You know, how that food got here or what it's connected to. And then the museum staff will work with Candace, who is a historian that writes a lot about food, and distill that into a product that we can use for public exhibit. So we spend a lot of time reaching out to different parts of the community. I really believe on a hands-on approach. You know, we get a lot of students of all ages that come to the museum, and we get university students, we get high school, we get grade school. But I think if they get involved in an actual product, I think that will resonate with them a lot more and leave a lasting impression and maybe even change their life. You know, I have a, well, I'm going to hold this story. I don't think it'll be in the display, but probably at the reception. The visitation. And then there will be a reception. So for a number of years, we've been doing the first Thursday Museum After Hours lecture series. This is an opportunity for people to get into the museum in the evening. And so on first Thursdays, we're open until 9 o'clock. We always have a speaker. We just this past week had historian Jack Nisbet come and talk about David Douglas. And we do record, as long as the speaker agrees, we record those lectures, and then we post them as podcasts on the museum's website. So if somebody couldn't make the lecture, or they want to hear it again, they need to go to our website, ccsmuseum.org, and then they can access those talks. Yeah, well, I hope so. I know, I'm sorry, I forgot that part. And the Grand Hills Restaurant actually picked this up a few years ago, and they bring refreshments, they donate that. And then we have two sponsors, the Applied Archaeological Research and Clark County Historic Preservation Commission for that program. This is season 8 coming up of our historic walking tour program. There are 7 different walking tours. They're on Friday at noon. They start on May 30th, and they go through the different downtown neighborhoods or business districts. All of the information on those tours is available at the museum and on the website. In 2013, ESP 112 called us and said, hey, can you go on the tours, tape them, and put them on YouTube? And we said, absolutely. And so the 2013 tours are available on YouTube and accessible. They're linked to the website, museum's website. And then October, we did haunted tours on Friday and Saturday nights, which has been really fun. Harvest Sunday. Haunted tours, yeah. And there's real information here. There's no website. We're not, you know, spreading stories. Yeah, nobody's jumping out at you off the sidewalk. Now, I think everyone's familiar with, I hope they are, with the 11th. Coming up, it'll be the 11th Annual Harvest Sunday event. We've been partnering with the county, Mark, for 4 years. And this is always on the fourth Saturday in September at the 78th Street Heritage Farm site. It's an extremely popular event. It's free to the public. BC Farms has been with us the entire time. They donate all the pumpkins and the corn. Doolin sponsors the planting contest. About 16 nonprofits jump in and join us and the county in this venture. And as you can see in the photos, the families have a terrific time at the events. There's a number of opportunities for them to get together and actually make something with their hands, work together as a team. You know, they can decorate a pumpkin, they can make a scarecrow to take home. That's what's in the lower right, or lower left photo. And the scarecrow making activity is amazing. If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to come out and see it, because people just go crazy over this activity. The Salvation Army has been donating all the clothes for years. The picture in the middle is something that I'm particularly proud of, and I think extremely valuable in this partnership. The Clark County Food Bank Garden is at the Heritage Farm site. And on that day, the families can go and harvest vegetables for the food bank. And generally, with the exception of last year that poured rain and monsoon rain, the kids have been picking about 2 tons of vegetables that day at the event. It's an incredibly valuable thing for them to do. Many of these kids have never had their hands in the soil. A lot of them don't know that carrots are root vegetables, that they grow in the ground. We got the best compliment. Bill Coleman from the food bank told me that he overheard, as a parent, when you decide it's time to go, but your child doesn't want to follow, right? And there's a woman saying, look, honey, it's time to go, it's time to go. And this little girl is actively pulling carrots, and she says, but mommy, we're feeding people. That's what it is. They need to have a connection with the community. These children need to understand that they have a responsibility to give back to the community, and that's what comes out of this event. You get families working together, producing something with their hands, and kids learning to give back. It's an incredible event. It takes a lot of energy on everybody's part to pull this off, but I think the value is there. It is sponsored by us, and also the Clark Pellets Farm Bureau does provide, they gave us $2,500 last year for expenses, and BZ Farms is bringing in quite a bit of value in pumpkins and corn for the corn tucking contest. Doolin's does the high-eating facilities, puts up all the tents and that kind of stuff, and then helps manage the events, and also Waste Connections comes in for garbage and recycling. So it's quite an effort on a lot of people's parts.
I was able to attend the meeting there with the opinions on it was just the animal care, free life. You knew the experience, but they're going to go with purpose to get there.
It happened automatically.
If something goes that, it's a tricky way, a sneaky way, for us to get people thinking about welfare. You know, they come away having had a fantastic experience with this event, and yet at the same time, I know that out on the heritage farm site, we've had the draft horses and the mules and, you know, all of these hands-on activities. No organization gets to participate without being offering hands-on. They can't be there just to push brochures. They have to have an activity for kids. And 4-H is there. I mean, this is a very subtle way of reminding them about that aspect of the community, which is very important. And like I said, some of these kids are not, for whatever reason, exposed to these kinds of activities. They're not exposed to doing things with their family, or they're not exposed to agriculture. And they don't know where their food comes from. So there is so much value that comes out of this event. I just can't.
It is, and I think it's also a opportunity for the first time to get a big farm.
Absolutely. And we were getting, now this past September, we had about 600 people come because it mums in. So those were the really hardy ones who put the rubber boots on their kids and they came out. And we stayed. We were there all day and we were all kind of going, oh, what are we going to do? And so we were there to service those folks. But the previous year, we had 3,800 people come to our homes. This is a huge effort on everybody's part. I mean, and Facilities and Public Works does the road management. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of moving parts on this thing. But it's extremely beneficial to the community. It's a very healthy event for people to do. Any publication, I want to pass these over to you. I can't remember if I gave you your copy, but this is something that the Historical Society has done since 1960. And it used to be produced up in Seattle. It was printed in Seattle. It was a donation. And then the person who did that passed away. And so the Clark County Print Shop has been printing this since 2007. And this is a very beloved publication. This is written by people in the community. It contains stories about all aspects of the community's history. A lot of people wait for this. It's especially effective for people who, for physical reasons, can no longer get out and about. I mean, they're waiting for this publication. But it also is distributed to the community through schools and libraries. Museum membership gets a complimentary copy of this. So it has a lot of value, and it's done all on a volunteer basis. The editor, Howard Dingle, volunteers his time to actually corral the authors and edit this thing down. And then Jane Leonard from your staff has been doing this as a volunteer in her spare time for 4 years now, I think. So it's a labor of love, but a valuable document because if this publication didn't exist, a lot of these pieces of history would not be recorded. So this is a terrific way to get that out for folks.
This is 2012, 2013.
No, it's usually published every year. And so the next one will come out. We release it in November at our annual meeting. And so in November 2014 will come out.
When was it first published?
1960. We do, and here at the Board of Commissioners, you have the whole collection. Jennifer has it. She used to have it on her desk. She used to have it on the front desk. And at the museum, they are indexed. So if there's something you're looking for, that's a quicker way to check it out. But it covers, all kinds of topics. Yeah, it does make sense. We'd like to, but we have to get a release from the authors and all of that. But that's the goal, yes. That is the idea, to move forth and put it online.
And how much of this content is common and part of the book is used?
It's every publication is used. Yeah, it's a tremendous body of work. We're very lucky to have Howard as editor. Imagine he's chasing these authors down, getting them to meet deadlines, and it's hurting fast. He works very hard on this publication, and then the design work, that's a lot of work. Yes. So this comes out of our in-kind services budget with you.
A number of people don't realize that we're in a pitch shop, and they do a thing.
Yeah.
Very good. Very efficient. It's great. And it's a thing where it's well evolved.
Oh, absolutely. They're fantastic to work with. And we couldn't do it without it. Without that in-kind services budget, we don't have the money to take this out on the open market and print it. It fills a valuable niche. I really want to talk about our partnership with WSU Vancouver and Pullman Libraries. This is something I'm incredibly proud of. This is very progressive for an organization our size. Some private foundation money and the help of the Historic Promotional Grants Program at the county, we have been able to digitize the entire image collection. There are 15,429 images currently online available to the public via the museum's website or WSU's website. With that image collection, what I want to point out is that particular collection is the most used collection of any digitized collection in the WSU system. It's been hit very hard. In this past year, I got the figures for this presentation today, we had 87,629 unique views for the collection this past year. That's 87,000 different, hits on photos. That collection is pretty much contained, and we'll add the new images as they're donated. And it's a keyword searchable database. It's a lot of fun. You can quickly lose yourself in that database. But the next thing that we're doing right now, is digitizing the newspaper collection. That's what the focus of the current historical promotion grant is. WSU is complementing that grant with some in-kind services and staff time, so we will get 7 years of the Vancouver Independence done this year. And what's so unique about this particular project is it's not just a scan of the newspapers. It is keyword searchable and it's readable. So you can open up and read the pages of the newspaper. It's not like the old microfilm that you couldn't read. It's also, you can grab ads and different things or articles specifically out of the documents, and you can then paste them into a Word document.
It's a partnership. They're not just in the images. You can actually text physically there. In other words, it's physical. You can't just see it physically. It's a good text itself.
Yes, it is.
I love how you express that. Quite funny, the Historic Society is very professional. So, okay, I see what I'm talking about. You need to wait a bit of time to preserve our history, which is very smart.
Well, thank you. But it's also about making it accessible, because the Historical Society owns the collection, but the collection is there for the community. you know, if we don't share it, it's like, you know, you might as well just stick it in the warehouse and throw the keys away. We need to do this, and this is a valuable resource for people of all walks of life. You have people who may be doing family histories. Maybe their great-grandfather had a business in Clark County, and they didn't know much about it, and so they have these newspapers, and there's tremendous information in there. Or, you know, it's just students and teachers and business people who want to research something related to their business. I mean, there's lots of opportunities for use of that collection, and in recognizing that the museum, two things, can't be open 24/7. It's just not possible. And also, you can't utilize the newspapers over and over, or you'll destroy them. So this is a preservation method. It's also a safety method in case there ever was, you know, God forbid, a catastrophe downtown, and something happened. The entire image collection is backed up in Pullman on their server, and so as we progress to the newspapers, they're backing that up for us in Pullman, and that's a key part of that partnership. And without WSU, we couldn't do this. I mean, even the cost of doing this would escalate tremendously if we didn't have the Pullman and Vancouver Library support. We also do have something that the county worked with us initially on. When the convention center was built in downtown Vancouver, there was an archaeology project done, and 300 banker boxes of historic material came out of the ground. China, personal items, toys, glass bottles, all kinds of objects from people who used to live downtown. And so the county helped us get a certified local government grant initially, which then we were able to do a pilot project where we paired two teachers with an archaeologist to create curriculum around this material, because it tells the social history of the community from 1870 to 1920. So you're looking at urbanization, and that applies to, you know, not just Vancouver, it applies to the West Coast. And so from that, we springboarded working with Washougal School District and actually Evergreen and Richfield School Districts, got a Teaching America's History grant that went 3 years. We just completed that, where we paired additional teachers from each of those school districts to work with the archaeologists, come up with curriculum that any teacher could use. All of it's posted on our museum website. And then we have 8 ed kits. That's part of what's up at the building. And 8 ed kits that teachers can check out. And this is teachers in any school. This is homeschool, this is public school, you know, what have you. Teachers in Clark County that want to use this material. It's a way of making it available. And one of the things that I absolutely love is the Evergreen School District, their TV folks, did do a video, and we did a YouTube piece. And so people can see this project on YouTube. It's called Artifact Detectives. And it made me cry the first time I saw it, because it shows the relevancy of the material and how this works with the students. It shows the kids in the classroom. It also actually, both the CLG grant pilot project and the Teaching America's History grant won us 2 statewide awards as well from the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. So it has been recognized as being a significant project and an unusual way to approach this kind of a collection. On that particular, actually the curriculum that the teachers developed is broader than that. The site itself, the convention center site, that's what the archaeologists came up with, and it was 1870 to 1920. It represents garbage. The garbage people were throwing down the privy and burying in their backyard before mandatory garbage pickup was instituted in the 40s. And so you're looking at personal items from just that time period. But no, the museum's scope and breadth of the collection is much broader than that. The collection actually ranges from 1200 AD up until contemporary time. We have objects or archival items throughout that time span.
Spies, all the way back as far as we go, in the geometric type of story. It is the main focus of our primary kinds of origins.
Yeah, our primary charge is to provide museum services to the people of Clark County. Now, of course, if somebody has a different zip code, we don't turn them away at the door. But it's not our charge to get tourists, but that's not why we're there. We're there to serve the people of Clark County first. And then, of course, we welcome anybody who wants to come to the museum. But that is our focus. Our focus is looking at Clark County and how does that fit in with the bigger picture. We do participate in National History Day. We have a fund that was created by a former staff member, the person whose husband passed away unexpectedly. And Richard Anderson was his name, and very strong belief in education, and so provided them funds to provide a small cash award to Clark County students and teachers who participate in the Regional History Day program. So one student, or as in the case of this year, one group of students, is selected by the people that coordinate the History Day program. We don't make that call, they do. And then also one teacher who represents, exemplary leadership at History Day gets selected for the award, and then it's a small cash award to help them offset out-of-pocket expenses going to the state competition. National History Day is an extremely valuable program, and so this is our way of supporting that. And I would put a plug in, if anybody's ever looking for a great activity in February locally, you can be a judge at the Regional History Day competition. It's a very valuable experience.
And I see all of you sitting
in the middle of the target. It's not the target. They're generally 6th, 7th, and 8th that we've seen at the competition. It's up to individual teachers to get involved in History Day, and not everyone is able to do that. And so you get, around the county, you get different, teachers who choose to make this part of their work with their students. And generally, though, I think, I've always seen 6th, 7th, and 8th so far. We do provide a couple of awards. We recognize we have the Margaret Culp Heppala Heritage Award each year, looking for an individual who has gone above and beyond, preserving heritage in Clark County. And in 2013, it was Robert Schimmelfennig. Robert is involved with our WSU digitization project, but has also personally invested a lot of his time in making that project, those projects happen. So we recognize Robert this year. And we also did a group heritage award where we looked at a project in the community in 2013. And again, this is done at the November annual meeting. We recognized the Friends of the Chisholm Theater and Bill Lay, Dan Wyatt, Derek Chisholm, and Sinette Corkill for their work on preserving the Chisholm Theater. And this is something that there's a committee of people who look at these things and then come up with a recipient. There's no cash or anything, it's just an honor. And I mentioned that the museum is coming up on its 50th birthday inside the Carnegie Library. And so we will have a birthday party on May 24th inside the museum. So everyone is welcome to attend and sing happy birthday to the museum. I believe that'll be 1:00.
Where's
I'm inside the 1909 Carnegie Library where the museum is housed, and so that is 1511 Main Street in Vancouver. And at that event, we should be launching, when the building turned 100 years old in 2009, we launched a program called Mr. Carnegie's Grand Tour of Washington, which encapsulates the working Carnegie libraries around the state. We are now going to be doing Mr. Carnegie's Grand Tour of the Northwest. It'll be Oregon and Washington Carnegie Libraries, and that'll be kick-off that day. And then, of course, because we do need to raise money to support all of this good work, on May 10th is our annual dinner auction, and this year, Grammy Award-winning acoustic guitarist Doug Smith is donating his time to help the museum. We'll be at Club Green Meadows, and tickets are available and on sale now at your museum.
If anybody hasn't heard, just wait.
Well, and he has told us that he was happy to donate his time because he used to bring his kids to the museum. So that's kind of us in a nutshell. There's a lot of things that I didn't talk about that we do, but for the sake of saving time, because I can talk for hours. I know, I'm watching you watch. I guess I'm going to leave it at that. The one thing I would say is that, if it's at all possible to have a conversation about the contract renewal so we can get that off the table so that my successor, who will be here hopefully June 1st, can just hit the ground running and get to know the community and learn the job and move on and not have to worry about those kinds of details, that would be fantastic. It depends on the year. I'm glad you brought that up. We have not had an increase in our allowance since 2007. So another thing for you to consider is, if there's any way of upping that cash allowance a little bit, or any other in-kind services, that would be greatly appreciated. I think from the things that I presented to you, you can see, we're pretty active bunch over there and maximizing the use of the funds. No, that's not. It used to be the general fund. We got moved. All of our cash support comes out of that the historical promotional grant. 3 years ago, we moved. I think we got moved to that. So the $50,000 comes off the top of that program, and then the call for grant proposals goes out. And I think it's safe to say every year, and we have not received a grant every year, but we have received a number of those grants, and it's because we're very competitive. And the projects that we've been doing, I think, are very valid. It's not our farm.
Well, I assume that Michael gave any copies of that document as well as any of the conditions that you can get out of.
Okay, sounds good. So Mark and I will meet and we'll go from there. Do you have any questions for me?
Well, I'm really amazed that we're out of time. It's pretty crazy, but it's going to be worse. I didn't think we'd be gentle enough. It's very good. Very appreciative.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure. I have enjoyed my time with the organization immensely and my time in this community. It's going to be hard to turn my keys in, but everybody's life takes different chapters, and that's what's happening with mine. So,
I'm curious, is there an advisory or committee or a board that helps you guide?
Oh, absolutely. There is a board of trustees. Now, there are 13 people on that board. And
And I also want to acknowledge that there are a number of people in this building that care about this. Really, 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 this is an
September, it would be 11 years. Thank you.
Yeah, definitely appreciate any of that. I'll do it. You know,